Yeah, so I see that you are eager to go visit the city and do some tourism, so maybe I'm not going to last for the full hour. Especially since, as I told you yesterday, what I'm going to talk about today is still a bit speculative and not completely finished. So maybe it's safer for me not to go into too many details, because then you would see that the details are not actually completely wrong, completely right. But anyway, so as Wendelin said yesterday, I explained to you how to start with percolation on Z2, and relate it to percolation, to set percolation on a triangulation of the plane with a mesh which was essentially this. So triangulation with lots of symmetry, so that you know, for instance, that PC is a half and everything. And you get Rousseau, Seymour, Welsh, etc. And so the natural question is, well, you want to prove that the scaling limit of percolation on this kind of triangulation is still S36. What can you say, and what kind of construction can you do to prove such thing? And the first step, as I said yesterday, was to compute the scaling limit of crossing probabilities and try to obtain Cardy's formula. And so, not surprisingly, what I'm going to explain is essentially following Smirnov's proof of Cardy's formula for the triangular lattice, and try to see where he uses the fact that you are on the triangular lattice, and show that at no point it's actually necessary to have the triangular lattice, so that it would work on any triangulation. Well, the first thing I want to say is related to a remark I made yesterday about the choice of the embedding. So, first of all, the setup of what should be the theorem is the following. You want to take a triangulation of the plane which is periodic in two directions. So, one way to construct such a thing is you start with a torus, and you put a finite triangulation on the torus. So you will have triangles, maybe like this, on the torus. And then you want to lift that onto the plane. So I should lift it, but the title is here, so this is a projection. So I lift that to the plane, and so there is one fundamental period of the covering, which corresponds to just one torus. You get the triangles here, and then you get something which is periodic. And then this is the lattice you are interested in, so you will take a huge box in the plane, and you want to compute crossing probabilities for side percolation in such a lattice. Well, if you do it like that, there is one degree of freedom, which is essentially choosing a modulus for the torus. And if you look at the embedding here, you can always ensure that this is the origin of the complex plane, this is one. And this point has some complex coordinate alpha, which you have to choose. And then it's easy to see that the model can be rotationally invariant for only two values of alpha at most. Meaning alpha and its complex conjugate, which is essentially one symmetry on the whole model. So it doesn't break rotational invariance. And so the natural question is what. Well, say that if you look at a rectangle which is A by B but with an angle theta, crossing probability, you want the crossing probability not to depend on theta. And if you embed it wrongly, then it will depend on theta in some periodic way. And so you get some sign of something in the end, but it depends on alpha. So you want to choose alpha so that the scaling limit crosses all the rectangles with the same probability. Yeah, of course, the discrete model is not rotationally invariant, because it cannot be. Okay, so the natural candidate for alpha is the following. But it's a wrong candidate. So what you can do is to take a simple random walk on the lattice. If you project it, you get a simple random walk on the finite graph, so you get exponentially fast convergence to the equilibrium measure, which you know explicitly because it's proportional to the degree. And so what you get to the right is a central limit theorem with a covariance matrix which depends on alpha, but which is completely explicit. And so you get a covariance matrix sigma which depends on alpha. And the natural condition you want to have on your lattice to get rotational invariance is that sigma alpha should be lambda times identity. So this gives you a system of two equations on alpha. You get the real part and the imaginary part, so you get exactly one, or exactly two values of alpha, which are complex conjugate to each other. Okay, so this gives you one particular embedding of the given triangulation. The fact is, this is not the right one for percolation, which is quite surprising because you want to say that choosing a regular conformal embedding of a lattice should be something quite universal and not dependent on the model. But it does. And here's one reason why this is not the right one. Say you look at this triangulation, so periodic, and this is one period. Well, obviously you want to embed it by squares. It has additional symmetry, and additional symmetry should be preserved here. So alpha has to be I or minus I. So this is the embedding which is correct for the simple random walk and has to be correct for percolation. So this is okay, but now you can do the following remark. If this is a lattice, you look at side percolation for p equals 1/2 on it, and you add one vertex here. And you connect it like this. While it's still a triangulation, you still can define percolation on it. And the fact is, the connections between these four vertices is actually independent of the state of this vertex. It's easy to see if you add this vertex, it cannot connect sites which were not connected in the first place. But if this connects this one and this one, it means they were open, so they were already connected by this edge. So adding this vertex changes nothing. So the embedding for that, for percolation, is still I. But if you look at the simple random walk on this lattice, well, then you do all the computation and you find that A for the random walk is square root of 7 over 6 times I. 6 over 7, sorry. The presence of this vertex makes the random walk have a variance which is bigger in the vertical direction. So it's kind of a nice and natural question to ask what alpha should be for percolation in the general case. And if you look at that, well, there is one candidate which is actually both related to conformal maps and invariance by adding one point like that. And it's the one you obtain by circle packing. So the picture is like this. You will want to have a family of circles centered on the vertices of your lattice and tangent to each other if and only if the two vertices are connected by an edge. So in the original case, the value of alpha you get like that is still alpha equals I, but adding a vertex here means just adding a circle here, so it doesn't change anything to the circle packing picture. So it's invariant by the same local transformations of the triangulation as for percolation. Okay, but I have no clue why this should be related to percolation. So maybe it's completely wrong, and maybe it's, well, maybe the question was what alpha is the kind of question like what PC site on V2. Maybe the answer is just a number and has no clear meaning. And doesn't give so much insight about the model. You can solve the question. Anyway, so Now essentially I had two choices. Either give the full proof following exactly Snellhoff's paper and removing the occurrences of the triangle lattice, I'll tell you about the differences. But presumably some of you haven't read Snellhoff's paper or are not so familiar with all the notations, so I guess I have to keep to the first option. So here's what you want to do. Assume you have fixed alpha, maybe it's not the right one yet, but you have a periodic triangulation in the plane with some mesh. So one period is typically like this, mesh delta. You take critical site percolation for p equals 1/2 on it, and you want to compute the crossing probability of this rectangle here. Well, the first thing, so I'm sorry for those of you who have complete knowledge of Snellhoff's paper, because then you will not learn anything in the next probably 30 minutes or so. But I don't think I have any choice about that. So you want to compute the crossing probability for a rectangle, say A, B, C, D. And the first great insight is to say that you can complexify the problem by listing, say, point D inside the domain to a point Z, and say that if you can compute the probability that this happens, that there is a crossing for a simple self-avoiding open path separating C and Z from A and B, if you can compute the probability of that as a function of Z, then by letting Z go to one point on the boundary, you get the crossing probability. So then the domain is just one simply connected domain with three points on the boundary, A, B, and C. And so, just for the notations, HA with some delta, which I will omit here, is the probability that, well, not exactly this one would be HC, but that A and Z are separated from B and C, from B and C. So that's a function of Z. So if you can compute the limit, or prove that the limit of this as delta goes to zero exists, and compute it, then you're essentially done. So you want to see if this converges to some function small h, a of z. If it does, then h, a of z will give you the crossing probability. Which one? This one? Yeah, this is exactly what I said during when I wrote it. It means that there is a green path separating A and Z from B and C. Yeah, maybe it looks too much like a conditional probability, but it's not. It's just notation is shorter than drawing the whole picture each time. Okay, so HB of Z is probability that B and Z are separated from A and C, etc. Okay, and then, as it turns out, the limit of these functions, in the case of the triangular lattice, is harmonic. And so, the original scheme of the proof was prove that the limit is harmonic, obtain boundary conditions on these functions. And then once you have that, well, you just solve a problem with prescribed boundary conditions and you get uniqueness of the solution, so you get uniqueness of these functions. So you identify any possible such sequential limit and then you get the exact computation of what HA is. As it turns out, it's not quite necessary to obtain boundary conditions. And that's a good sign because originally the boundary conditions involved, well, derivative along angles which were strongly related to the triangular lattice. And this turns out not to be too necessary. So maybe I should start doing something more explicit. So the goal is to prove that HA is harmonic, and you want to write it as the real part of some function and prove that the function is holomorphic. And this will tell you that HA is harmonic. So here's what you can do. You can define a function, say H of D, which is lambda A HA of V plus lambda B HB of V plus lambda C HC of V. So lambda A, lambda B, and lambda C are complex parameters, and then I adjust them so that you can prove that H is a holomorphic function. So here maybe I should be a little more precise about what V is, because well, H is defined on lattice, so Z has to be somewhere where it makes sense for H to be defined. And as it turns out, the right domain for the function H is the dual lattice. So H will be defined when Z is in the center, at the center of the triangle of the lattice. Okay, so the H and HA and HB, etc., map the vertex set of the dual of the triangulation to C. So we want to prove that H, for given choices of lambda A, lambda B, and lambda C, is a holomorphic function. And the natural way of doing that is to use Morera's theorem, stating that if a function H, which will be one subsequential limit of big H as delta goes to zero, the continuous function is holomorphic, if and only if for every gamma, which is a closed path, so contained in the domain you have, and the integral along gamma of h of v dv is equal to zero. So the plan is you take gamma somewhere here, you pick a fixed mesh delta, you discretize gamma so that it's a path on the edges of the dual lattice. You discretize this integral. So a natural choice to do that is the following. So gamma delta is the discretized version of gamma. So it's a sequence of points, z0, z1, etc., zn, which is equal to z0. You want to discretize this integral, which I'm to call I, as I delta, which will be, well, what's natural in the, when you look at that, so it will be the sum over I of h of z, the natural version of that will be, well, h delta of vi plus h delta of vi plus 1 over 2. Well, what you put exactly here will not be so relevant. You could put just h delta of vi, but this is more symmetric. So it gives us two nicer formulas. And dt will be zi plus 1 and vi. Okay, so this is gamma delta, and you sum over all the edges along gamma this product h times dz. So you get sum along that. Okay, and you want to somehow relate that to derivatives of H and obtain some kind of Green formula to show that you want to compute the discrete derivative of H and show that this goes to zero. So the first steps will be to compute this integral using Green formula and relate it to derivatives of H. And so you do what is natural when you want to obtain Green's formula. The first step is, well, you decompose the interior of gamma as a union of faces of the dual lattice, and you write this sum as the sum over all the faces of the lattice which are contained in the interior of gamma of the sum along the boundary of F of the same product here. So as you see, the edges which are on the boundary appear once, and the edges which are inside appear twice, so they cancel out, so they don't change the value of I. Okay, and then once you look at the sum over one face here, well, you can introduce one vertex which is the center of the face, which is one original vertex of the original triangulation. You introduce it here, and so you write zi plus 1 minus zi as zi plus 1 minus c plus c minus zi, and you make a change of index, and you make an integration by parts, and I spare you the details of that. That's completely straightforward. And what you get is exactly one half of the sum for all the edges contained in gamma of E star times H of E minus H of E. So if E is an edge, an oriented edge, E bar is the target of the edge, E with the bar under it is the origin of the target, so this is kind of a discrete derivative of H along E, and E star is just what you expect. If this is the dual lattice, this is E. E star is the dual edge, so it's an edge of the original triangulation which crosses E and which is oriented in such a way that E star is direct. So this is what you get, and I want to call that dE of H. And this cross here is just complex multiplication. You see E star as a complex number, which is the difference between these things. Okay, so this is the equivalent of Green's formula, and still following what? Sorry? No, the lambdas are not real, so this is complex valued. Well, it is if you choose real parameters. Okay, so then you want to use some probability, so you want to use the fact that you have percolation somewhere in the model. And, well, again, you follow Smirnov because essentially he did everything. You want to estimate the difference of H between two sides here. And so you write it as, well, HA of E minus HA of E, that's the difference of probability. So it's a probability that this one occurs and not this one, minus the symmetric event. So I want to write that as PA of E minus PA of minus E, with the following notation: PA of E is exactly the probability that E with the bar on top satisfies this separation, but E with the bar below does not. So this is exactly the probability that A and E bar are separated by an open path from E underscore B and C. And then minus E is just E with the reverse orientation. So you take this, you plug it here, and you get the sum of six terms here, which you want to relate to each other. And the main lemma, which is actually the only place where you use the fact that it's really percolation you're looking at, is the following. So I need one additional notation. If this is a face of the triangular lattice, maybe this is an edge E. Yes, it's an edge E. Well, it has two companion edges, like this, which I want to call tau E and tau squared E. So formally, tau will be E to the 2 pi I over 3, but this is not multiplication, this is just saying that it's the next edge in a cyclic order around one point. And then what Smirnov proves is that, with this notation, Ta of E is equal to PB of tau E, which is equal to PC of tau squared e. Okay, maybe I should say a word about the proof of that, but very quickly, because the proof is exactly the same as on the triangular lattice. It actually affects on any triangulation that these identities occur. So here is the domain, here is a triangle, and this is E. Say E is like that. What does it mean that PA occurs? It means that this point and A are separated from B and C, and this point by an open path. So you get a path like this. And this one is not separated, so you get a closed path connecting it like that. Okay, and then you can choose these paths so that this one is the most clockwise such path connecting this point to the right of C, and this is the most left, the most counterclockwise path. And then what you do is the following. You say that you can discover these two paths by an exploration process. So you start here. You consider all these sites outside the domain here to be green, all the sites here to be blue. And you are on a triangulation, you will walk on the dual lattice. So each time you arrive on a triangle, you discover one new vertex. And if the vertex is green, you turn left. If it's blue, you turn right. And so you get a uniquely defined exploration process here. And saying that you have two paths like that means that you land in the triangle. And the fact that this construction is local means that, conditionally to the shapes you have discovered when you reach this point, what you see outside is independent of what's inside. What you see outside is just percolation. And then you are still looking at the percolation picture at t equals 1/2. So the whole picture is invariant if you change all the colors of the sites outside this point. So actually the probability that this occurs is equal to the probability that this occurs with the blue arm here. And then if you globally change the colors, which still doesn't change the probability, while you see the following picture, so this is the original picture here, this has become blue and then green again. This has become green and this has become blue. And what you recognize is exactly this picture for the rotated arrow, so for the edge roots, which I call tau squared e, and here the special point is, did I get it wrong somewhere here? So this is A, B, and C. Yeah, so this is tau e and this is B instead of A. So this was PA of e, and this is PB of tau e. And they are equal just because you look at the correlation for P equals 1/2. So here you don't use the fact that you look at the correlation on the triangular lattice. Okay, so then what you want to do is you look at this sum here. You write H as a difference of PA. So you get the sum of lambda A times PA here minus PA here plus lambda B plus lambda C here. You transform all the PB and PCs into PAs by this lemma. So you get a whole linear combination of PAs of E. And then you reindex them so that the PA of E for the same E are all together. So it's just a change of index. It again looks like an integration by parts. You get a combination in linear combination of E star instead of a combination of PAs. And what you get. So I spare you the detail of that. Is still straightforward, that I delta is the sum of all oriented edges of some factor which comes out of the reindexing, which is exactly lambda AE plus lambda B times tau E plus lambda C times tau squared E PA of E. So I should add that there is some little O of 1 because of boundary terms which are not exactly cancelled out when you do all that, but that's not relevant, you can control them easily. So this is relevant, but what you get is this linear combination of terms like PAFE. Okay, so when you look at that, the first choice you can do for lambda A, lambda B, and lambda C is, well, lambda E equals lambda B equals lambda C equals to 1. So you just look at the sum of these probabilities. Well, then here you get, sorry, that was an E star, that was a star here, and that was a star here. So when you look at the sum here, what does it mean? So this is E, this is E star, this is tau E star, and this is tau squared E star. So they are the three edges of a triangle. And so this sum, E star plus tau E star plus tau squared E star, is identically zero. And so what you get is that for this particular choice of the lambdas, the integral is zero because it vanishes around any triangle. So what you get is the fact that the sum HA plus HB plus HC converges, or any subsequential limit is a function whose integral along any curve here is zero. So the limit of HA plus HB plus HC is holomorphic by Morera. But here you have taken real parameters, so H is actually real, and so it's constant. And then if you take the value of this sum here, so HA plus HB plus HC on a point of the boundary, say on a corner that's easier to see, at A, HA of A is just 1, that's the probability that there is a curve doing that. So this, by also Simmel-Welsch, is equal to 1, and HB of this point is the probability that B and a point here are separated, that's the probability that there is a path doing something like that. And the probability of that is 0, because the probability of having a cross cut like that of closed vertices is close to 1. So what you get is that HA of A is 1, HB of A is 0, which is the same as HC of A. And so what you get is that the sum of the three is 1 at this point, but it's constant. So what you get is the following. You put everything together. HA plus HB plus HC, as delta goes to 0, converges to 1. So this is stated in Stirner's paper. It doesn't depend at all on the triangulation you choose. It's true for any embedding. It's always true. This seems to be completely non-trivial probabilistically. I don't think anybody has a good interpretation of this relation. But anyway, on the other hand, it will tell you why the triangular lattice is quite natural for the problem. So we have these three functions, and the sum of them is equal to 1. So it's natural to look at the triple, HA, HB, and HC, which goes from the domain omega to, well, R plus the three, but essentially it arrives on the simplex of coordinates x plus y plus z equals to 1. So it maps your domain to the simplex like that. And the simplex is an equilateral triangle. So here you have three coordinates, the sum which is controlled because it converges to 1, and you get two other coordinates which give coordinates along this plane here. And so if you want to put this back to the complex plane, the natural choice for the lambda A, lambda B, and lambda C then is the following. Well, you take essentially barycentric coordinates here, and it will tell you that the natural combination is HA plus tau HB plus tau squared HC. So this is the relevant function. If you can prove that this is holomorphic in the limit, then you get everything. And the remark is the following. If you compute that using the same Green function here, what you get is E star plus tau E star times tau plus tau squared times that. And this, so E star plus tau times tau E star plus tau squared times tau E star, this is equal to zero if and only if the triangle at the origin of the edge E is equilateral. So once again, if you take all equilateral triangles, well, this vanishes for every E here, and so you get that the limit is holomorphic, and then this gives you Cardy's formula on the triangular lattice. In a way which I believe, well, maybe this is a bit quick here, but this gives you the fact that H is holomorphic. So just one word about the boundary condition. Why is this sufficient to prove that the function is exactly what you need to compute Cardy's formula? Well, if you look at H here, it will map omega to the simplex, then rotated and put back to the plane. So it maps omega to the triangle with vertices at 1, tau, and tau squared. And then if you look at what it does along the boundary, well, here I computed HA of one point on the boundary, and if you look at a point which is, say, on AC, while HB is still zero because you need something very unlikely to happen, and so what you get is that HA plus HC is equal to 1 here. And so if you map one point on this part of the boundary by this combination here, HB is 0 and HA plus HC is equal to 1, so you map the whole part of the boundary to this segment here. And then the same happens for the two other parts of the boundary. So H goes from the boundary of omega to the boundary of the triangle, and this application is 1 to 1 because H is strictly monotone along the boundary. So you get a holomorphic function going from omega to the simplex here and mapping the boundary to the boundary 1 to 1, and then it's basic index theory to show that this implies that H is the unique conformal map from omega to the triangle with the prescribed mapping from the 3 points on the boundary to these 3 points on the boundary. So H is characterized uniquely just by saying that it's holomorphic and by saying that the sum is 1 along the boundary. So proving that H is holomorphic is sufficient to prove Cardy on the triangular lattice. So once again, here you don't, at this step, you don't need the fact that it's a triangular lattice. You don't need exact control of directional derivatives along the boundary. Just do abstract nonsense about conformal maps. Well, all that is very nice, but it's essentially the same as Smirnov did. Well, I feel it's simply easier to remember in this way than the way he does it. But, well, conceptually it's exactly the same thing. So what to do on a general case? In general. Well, so you have this estimate here for the path, for the integral along the contour, which is I delta is the sum of psi of e times pa of e, where pa of e is a probabilistic term, that's a probability that something happens for percolation, and psi of e is a purely geometric term, it's just a linear combination of dual edges. So the natural thing to do is the following. We write I delta as the sum over all the periods of the graph which are contained in the interior of the contour gamma. So maybe you have to ensure that gamma contains the entire number of such periods, but that comes for free. You can choose the discretization of this is the gamma delta of gamma as you wish. And then you get the sum over one period of this phi of e times pa of e. Then the plan is the following. There is one thing you can do. So you have the domain omega, you have the curve gamma here, this is omega. You have one period. You will fix some period, so I need a notation, p. So you fix one period p0 somewhere. Well, one thing you can do is to apply an affinity to the picture. So you deform it in a real linear fashion. So this will deform omega, this will deform gamma and p0 and everything. But it will not change pa because pa is purely combinatorics. And it will change phi of e in a linear fashion. And it will also change the embedding, it will change alpha in a linear fashion. So you will be able to choose, choose the value of alpha in such a way that the sum over p0 of psi of e and a of e is exactly zero. And you can do that because this is a linear equation in alpha. And it has to be non-singular. But if it was singular, then you could just flatten omega to a line, and then you would get something which has to be real because it's 0 or 1, and it's not possible. Because that would violate Rousseau-Semon-Welch. Okay, so you choose alpha so that this sum is 0 at some controlled location in the domain. And then what you have to do is show that this implies that the sum on other periods is small enough. And the way you do that is exactly where I didn't want to show you the details because that's, well, at least some and maybe all, and I'm not sure how many details are missing. But the idea is the following. Take P0 here and take a period which is not too far from P0. Well, what you want to show is that, well, there is a one-to-one correspondence between the edges here and the edges here. And phi of an edge is just a function of the local geometry of the triangulation, so it will be the same for both periods here. So maybe I should put just two neighbors like that. So you will make a pairing of the edges of P0 and P0 plus one shift of one mesh of the lattice. And you want to show how this besides the A of E. Then the same thing happens as in what I explained yesterday. Shifting the origin point is the same as shifting the domain. And then if you want P A of E to happen and P A of the shifted version not to happen, it's the same as having E somewhere here, the domain omega here. So having three arms in this domain, and not in the shifted version of the domain. So this is the shifted domain. And you need the three arms not to extend to the shifted domain. And so it can happen in infinitely many ways. These were the points A, B, and C. It can happen essentially in this way, that there is some new arm blocking this green arm from touching the boundary of the shifted domain. So the probability that this happens, as I explained yesterday, this at a given point has a probability of order delta squared. Well, delta is the size of the shift and 1 is the size of the domain. And so this can happen at any point on the boundary. If the boundary is smooth, there are delta to the minus 1 point. And so what you get is that Pa of E minus Pa of the shifted version of E, which I want to call E plus delta. Well, this is essentially Pa of E times 1 plus bigger of delta. So this is true, this is a fact. Sorry? Okay. So if you remember what I explained yesterday, essentially this is sufficient if you want to show that Russell's formula sums to 0 plus little root of 1, because you get local cancellation. Well, here, essentially, the same wants to happen. If you look at the sum of a P of phi of E times Pa of E, well, that's the sum of a P0 of phi of E, which is the same, times Pa of E plus delta, which is pi A of E times 1 plus bigger of delta. This sum of phi of E, Pa of E is 0 by choice of alpha. That's how we define the embedding. And so this is bigger of delta times phi of E is bigger of delta also. And Pa of E is bigger of delta to the sum exponent eta. And this is given by also Semovich. Okay. So you get something which has exponent delta to the 2 plus eta, but this, of course, is not sufficient because you have two neighboring periods and you want to, well, to say something about the relation between one period here and one period here. And what will happen is, if this is period P0 and this is period P, you can construct a chain of periods going from here to here, and each time you get a factor which is essentially 1 plus bigger of delta, you get delta to the minus 1 such factors. And so you lose everything. You multiply by a constant, which all you can say of is it's positive, it's bounded. But so if you can control how this term, this error term here, depends on E, and if you can say that this Pa of E minus Pa of E plus delta over Pa of E is some C times delta plus bigger of something of higher degree, where C does not depend on E, then maybe you can relate what happens between this and this, saying that we get a multiplicative factor which is the product of 1 plus this, which doesn't vanish, but which is the same for all the edges. And then you get the error terms here, and these will give you something which doesn't, well, which vanishes in the sum as delta goes to 0. And essentially what you want to prove for that is the same as the picture I did yesterday. Maybe I should do the picture again, and that will be my last board here. You want to compare the probability to lose starting from one edge and starting from another edge in the same period and show that they look the same. So the question is the following. You have one edge here and one edge here. And this term is exactly the conditional probability to have three arms like this, knowing that you have three arms starting from a given edge. So there is one picture with three arms starting from here, and one picture with three arms starting from here. And what you want to control is to what points you can couple these two pictures in such a way that they agree outside some radius, in such a way that this three-arm event has the same conditional probability when the coupling is successful. So you will have something like square root of delta. Well, the problem is the coupling which I told you about yesterday seems not to work here, essentially because you have three arms instead of four. So there is some additional condition that this arm and this arm don't touch, and this complicates the matter. And the other thing is, well, yesterday I told you that, well, the first ingredient in the proof was to show that probability that one point and the neighbor were locally essential was the same up to this factor, which was, again, 1 plus big O of delta. Here, it's not the case that if you take two edges in the same period, the probability to have three arms has the same constant in front. But there's no reason for that to happen because you don't assume that there is symmetry inside one period. So this essentially complicates the matter, but probably what you can expect is, so PA of E over PA of F for two edges inside one period, this should converge to some lambda of E and F as the mesh goes to zero, and knowing the values of these will tell you what alpha should be because you just solve a linear equation again. Well, potentially it would be possible by realizing a correct coupling to show that this converges without knowing the limit and then to conclude everything. But so far I don't know how to do that, so I guess it's safe if I stop here. So thank you.